You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hey y'all, this is Mark. Welcome to episode 90. On the last show, we traveled back in time to the 1984 World's Fair, which was held here in New Orleans. Local journalist Mike Scott helped us revisit the fair through the present-day geography of the Warehouse District. This was a fun walk down memory lane. If you missed that episode, go back and give it a listen. I think you'll enjoy it, especially if you spent time at the fair back in the summer of 1984. Today's episode starts with an exhibit at the Historic New Orleans Collection called Art of the City, Postmodern to Post-Katrina. Coincidentally, the exhibition, or the idea for this exhibition, starts with the World's Fair. But before we jump into today's discussion, I want to tell you about Two Chicks Walking Tours. If you're a regular listener to the show, you've heard me talk about their wonderful Garden District tour. Today, I want to tell you about their Brothels, Bordellos, and Ladies of the Night tour. Brothels is a nighttime tour that sheds some light on an element of the dark past of the city with respect, sass, and a whole lot of fun research to back it up. It starts close to the river and winds to the back of the quarter. It's currently offered on Fridays and Saturdays, and it'd be a great choice if you want to learn more about Storyville and the people who worked there. Two Chicks also offers tours of St. Louis Cemetery No. 1 and the Garden District. All right, with that, let's jump into today's discussion. To help us, I'm joined by the curator of the new exhibit at the Historic New Orleans Collection. And she's not only a curator, but she's a native New Orleanian, an artist, an educator, and so much more. Welcome to the podcast, Jan. How are you?
Thank you, Mark. I'm terrific.
I am really excited to be here with you today. And we happen to be just across the street from the Historic New Orleans Collection. We'll get into that. But this is where you have your workspace and your studio.
Right? I do. Totally coincidental. I happen to have a studio that I share with Jana Napoli on the third and fourth floor of a building across the street from this new Brulator building of THNOC.
So that makes it really convenient.
Extremely.
So what got me interested in the exhibit was I was doing this episode about the World's Fair and sort of just Googling, if you will, World's Fair. And I came across, I knew Eli over at the Historic New Orleans Collection, and I came across the current exhibit, which I want to get into. And one of the just searches I did talked about the World's Fair as part of the start of this. And so I want to get into all that. But before we do, let's tell people a little bit. So you and I were talking offline that you grew up in New Orleans. You grew up in Lakeview.
Lakeview girl.
So not too far from me, not too far from Teddy's girl, longtime listeners have heard. And you really have your roots, your family roots in the city, don't you?
I absolutely do. Many years, both my grandmother, my biggest art influence, and a little Italian lady, grew up in the quarter. My dad, baseball, Gilbert's family. And we've been here, my family, we can't go out of town to college. We have to stay here so that we don't move away.
And it seems like you went to all the colleges or have taught.
I've taught, exactly.
So you're Loyola and Tulane and UNO.
That's correct.
So you got it like
even
all
Delgado,
covered.
Delgado. And I've taught at most of these as well.
So you basically surrounded the neighborhood that you grew up in as well.
Correct.
And you mentioned in passing your dad. We did an earlier episode with Derby Just Claire about baseball in New Orleans. And you come from a real baseball family. We were talking about almost the Mannings of New Orleans baseball. Your dad played for the Brooklyn Dodgers.
It's true.
But your grandfather was a manager of the Pelicans.
Larry Gilbert, absolutely. One of the Miracle Braves as well, but he did manage the Pelicans. Very respected, wonderful guy. Pops, we called him.
Pops. So that's a really neat tie to one of the other things that we talked about on the podcast. But let's talk a little bit about how did it come to be that you guys came up with the idea for Art of the City? And let's talk a little bit about what it is. But first, the inspiration for that.
Well, I am so lucky. I was happened to be invited by Priscilla Lawrence, who is the executive director and president, CEO, of the collection. And this was an idea that they had, which as an artist, a local artist, native Orleanian, I was so delighted knowing what the collection means to our city, but knowing that they were coming out with this huge, wonderful new expansion, the first time ever contemporary exhibition because it's the first time they had the space to do this. This new expansion, 35,000 square feet and 8,000 of it in this new purpose-built wing for contemporary galleries of art. So the idea, the subject of the urban landscape of New Orleans was presented to me. I am a public artist. As you say, my native New Orleanian stature is my favorite qualification for doing this, but I have curated for many years, and Priscilla and I just started brainstorming. And I, of course, ideas are one of my favorite things to do. And so I really had a lot of ideas about this, one of which was, you know, the collection itself is vast. So that would be the first thing that we would go to and look. And truly, this is a collaborative process. Priscilla assisted me, but also this amazing team that is of the collection, you know, 130 people staff. It's just unbelievable to collaborate with. But they, so we passed with the collection. 35 of the pieces come from the collection. But then, you know, I definitely felt that it needed to include a lot of programming, a lot of multidisciplinary programming, mm-hmm. but also public art. Because as you say, we looked at this period of time, about 35 years, roughly from the World's Fair, 1984. I heard your podcast today, and it's great.
And if we just last week was the end of of the opening of the park, of the World's Fair.
Absolutely. And so that period of time to date, so much has happened, both in terms of what's happened in the city, strife and wonderful things, you know, but also the idea of what art ecosystem has flourished from that time.
Well, I thought it was really interesting. So I was a teenager, spent a lot of time that summer at the World's Fair. But you're right. And I was away from New Orleans for many years and came back about 8 or 9 years ago. And one of the many things that we notice on a daily basis is the proliferation of public art.
Absolutely.
In the city.
Yes.
And I don't remember, maybe it was, but I don't remember it as a kid like it is now. And even how it's expanded in the last couple of years, you just see art popping up all over the city in all kinds of forms. Everything from sort of unofficial graffiti art to commissioned works on neutral grounds and on the electric boxes and on the side of buildings. It really seems like a vibrant time. What was the impetus for 1984? Was it the World's Fair that caused the sort of, where do you mark it?
There was an exhibition. We saw this just as a nice marker, really. Mm-hmm. There was an exhibition, Louisiana Major Works. There were a lot of art things happening within the World's Fair.
Sure.
And we wanted to point to them. So, for example, Frank Gehry, who I know you all talked about on your podcast,
did
the amphitheater. Now, Frank Gehry was not the big Frank Gehry back in 1984.
Right.
And of course, everybody said that this building was not saved, I'm sure. But it was never intended to be a long time. It was a temporary amphitheater right on the river where acts could perform and you would see the river through it. Now, again, water was the theme. And so another piece that won a competition was by the artist Linda Banglis. And now Linda is a Lake Charles, Louisiana woman who went to Newcomb. And this piece, it's a very interesting story. And we have a short video that is part of the exhibition. She did a piece called The Wave, which now resides in and the Grand Lagoon in City Park, right off of LaLonde near Noma. But this piece has been missing for like 30 years. No one knew where it was. It was later found at a sewage treatment plant in Kenner. And the Hellas Foundation, our large funder for the exhibition, they helped have this piece redone, back up to Brooklyn, where she lives and where it was made. And so this piece is part, you know, we take people on a tour, a bike tour, the Portage Roll. And so that is one of the hallmarks of that.
So that's one of the things. And in a little bit, we're actually going to stop and we're going to walk across the street and talk in the gallery. But first, just a couple things. The exhibit started on April 9th. We're recording this in 2019. It started on April 9th, and it'll run through October 6th of this year. But I love the idea that the exhibit, if you will, is beyond the walls of the Historic New Orleans Collection. So you mentioned the Portage Tour. It's a series of bicycle tours that you guys are doing. And there are maps available online and certainly at the collection that are sort of taking you in an immersive way into examples of the art that you guys talk about in the exhibit, right?
Absolutely. From the river, they start at Crescent Park, and they pretty much go down the portage. Alan Askew was an architect who actually came here for the World's Fair to work on it. And sadly, he died in 2013. But he did this tour. And Babette Bollier is an artist who resurrected this tour. And the collection, they went with gusto for so many of these out-of-the-box ideas. Like, let's go do this. Let's go on the bikes. You know, let's do a map. Let's, you know, have a cartographer come and make a map for us, you know.
Right. The map itself is a bit of a piece of art.
Absolutely. Jacob Rosenzweig worked with it and with us and did a beautiful piece. It's one huge wall in the first floor of the exhibition.
And so we'll
space.
Take a look at that in a little bit. And I should mention, we'll put links to the Historic New Orleans collection, to Jan's work, to the things that we talk about today over at our website in the show notes. It'll be beyondbourbonst.com/90, and that'll be a good jumping off point for people to find it. And again, even if someone listens a couple years from now, you'll be able to recreate the bike tour. It's about 6 miles, I think. So you could also do it as a long walk if you wanted. But it really, in that way, this exhibit is going to live on and also continue to showcase artists beyond what people might get to see at the Historic New Orleans Collection.
Precisely.
And I, for me at least, I think as a New Orleanian, it's a really interesting exhibit because, again, art keeps popping up all over the city. And it feels to me, and maybe we'll talk about this when we get across the street, it feels to me like in that way, it allows the art through artists to be more inclusive. So because it's all over the place, you get well-known artists and you get street artists and you get people just starting to cut their teeth and trying to find a way to get their art out into the world. At least that's my take on the exhibit.
Well, we made a point. I made a point, absolutely, to include people who were the kind of the, you know, first wave who really did. But again, we wanted works that began roughly at this time. So we didn't go back in history, you know, but some of the people are deceased.
Sure.
And so it's a memorial testament to their continuing presence, but also some youngsters, which we love.
Well, that's great. And we should mention even, if you can talk just a little bit about the art and the artist that was the inspiration for the cover art, if you will, for the signature piece, if you will, for the exhibit.
Absolutely. Well, we also have, and that's what we're referring to, I'm holding a catalog that is a free catalog. And it's important to note that this exhibition, Historic New Orleans Collection, is always free. The catalog is free. The programming is all free. Sometimes you have to make reservations to do it, but it is because of this funding through the Hellis Foundation, as well as the attitude of the founders of the Historic New Orleans Collection, who wanted public access. But so we have this catalog, and one of the signature images is by Krista Jurasich, and it's this, you know, it has a postmodern feel to it, and it is a window into the 1980s Poydras corridor of all of these wonderful skyscrapers coming up. And so you're actually seeing this kind of op and kind of, it's actually this very Byzantine type patterning that we've picked up and used frequently around in a very postmodern. There's a joyful, there's an irreverence, there's a wild coloration.
Right.
And so it has served as that side of it. And then we also have a lot of post-Katrina.
Sure.
And what was important, I wanted it not to be in a chronological division or ordered way. I want it to feel like the city, like you're wandering through this wonderful, chaotic city that happens, and, you know, the patina. And so that was our intention. And the idea of Katrina being interwoven, interspersed, because as we know, Katrina comes back, you know.
Yeah, well, and I think that, and we'll put a link again in the show notes so that people can see, if they don't get the chance to come in, the art that we're talking about, and certainly the catalog. But I love, so it's interesting to me, we're sitting in the French Quarter, we're in a building that's probably a couple hundred years old, and you can walk up to Canal Street and be looking towards the CBD, and this very stark, the postmodern, you know, this picture, among other things, has what until recently was called One Shell Square. And so you can stand on with your back to the French Quarter and the original part of the city and look at this very modern, you couldn't get much different, much closer to each other.
Very true.
And then I like that the exhibit does kind of the same thing. You come in through this new building, and we're going to do probably a separate episode with the folks at Historic New Orleans Collection about the new building and the permanent part of that exhibit with the history of the French Quarter as a neighborhood. But I like that you walk through that to get to this first exhibit in this new space. There'll be other exhibits, of course. But you walk through sort of 300 years and really beyond that. And then you are sort of presented pretty quickly with this kind of stark difference, much like you would crossing Canal Street. So I just love, as a New Orleanian, it maybe it was intentional, maybe it wasn't, but you get that same kind of experience.
Well, you walk through the courtyard, which is the Brulator courtyard that has been painted by so many of our wonderful painters over time. It's one of the most painted spaces in New Orleans.
Well, and again, that space itself is just, it's a beautiful space. And again, it's just a neat, again, juxtaposition of the history of our city, right? And that it is both at once, you can be looking at incredible new art in a very old space. And you're confronted with those things as you wander the city all the time, the new and the old, the different styles.
And there's some really phenomenal technological wonders that are both in the French Quarter exhibition as well as in our space.
Yes.
Where you might expect them in ours, but it's wonderful how the elevator or viewers use virtual reality. It's a real treat.
Yeah, it really is. I was so excited to go in a week or so ago. And again, we'll do an episode about that. But I want to talk about, so you mentioned the exhibit's free. The Historic New Orleans Collection is always free to go tour, which makes it just this incredible wealth of experience for people. And that's why we talk about it on the show, because I think people, particularly that aren't from here, don't even know that it exists, right? Or even if you are from here, you know, people just kind of overlook it and don't think about it. So with that, I think, why don't we take a little break and you and I will walk over and then we can talk about the exhibit itself in the gallery. How's
that?
Sounds
perfect.
All right. We'll be right back. All right, guys. So we're back and we have now walked across the street into the newest part of the Historic New Orleans Collection. And forgive me, Jam, what's the name of the building?
Well, it is the tricentennial wing of the new exhibition center of the Historic New Orleans Collection. We've referred to it as the Seigneurie Brulator, who were owners of this space.
The room we're in, you were telling me as we were walking over, is actually this one part of the exhibit will run through or into August, and then it will close. But the rest of the exhibit will stay. And I don't know how you would describe, they're going to use this space for other exhibits and for probably for events and things like that. But when you come in, a couple of things that strike me, and then certainly I want to get your take on it, you are presented with this very large wall. That's a map of the city with some flags on it that presumably point to different pieces of artwork.
It is art of the city, and it's the past art and present, some highlights of public art. And what we have also done, though, for the viewers is to prepare this map that is a handout, and people can pick it up. We have a beautiful pedestal that was prepared expressly for it, and it's really a double map. So the portage roll mm-hmm. that we spoke of is on one side, that's the green side, and then the other side is this more purplish side, and it is this past and present public art. And again, we have many more pieces, as you spoke about. This is just a highlight of about 9 different pieces spread out. And it's not intended to be a bike tour for this. It's much more spread out than that. But both of these are intended to be able to be self-guided, mm-hmm. if you will, in addition to the few days that they are guided tours.
Well, the other thing that strikes you when you come into the room, the sort of branding for the exhibit, Art of the City, they have snapshots of different types of art, whether it's photography or I see a picture of a cemetery scene, I see a picture of a home, and they're branded with the hashtag Art of the City. And so it makes it very much many of, some of these you could not go recreate, although you could go to a second line. The one here happens to be from a funeral. But you could go, if you were just interested in exploring the city, you could go find these.
Well, what actually, these are four of our banners, which is a whole separate component, both for marketing as well as educational departments. And so when we got going and rolling with Art in the City and Art of the City, we decided that it made sense to take some of these. And if you notice, these are detail shots. Mm-hmm. So we wanted people to really come in and see the whole thing. But we gave them, you know, details of this Michael P. Smith and Mac Ball and Tina Freeman and Carl Joe Williams pieces are here in the gallery. But there are about 10 of those spread throughout all these different neighborhoods of the city. On the side of Little Dizzy's, one of our partner, is Harold Baquet, who was a relative in the Baquet family. So they, and we also made educational activities, and there are in some cases going to be buses that will bring people from the neighborhood if they're interested on a designated day to come and see the exhibition.
It's neat. And again, it just gets back to that kind of immersive. I also like that, so we were talking offline, I have 7-year-old twins, and I'm not sure that we could keep their interest through the exhibit, but we certainly can keep their interest going to look at some of the sights through the city. In fact, one of their favorite things to do is to go look for the electric boxes throughout the city that have been painted.
Yes.
And so in that way, it starts to get them interested in art in a way that they aren't even thinking about it. And so again, if you're listening to this, let's say you listen to this a year or two from now and the exhibit proper is closed, you can get the materials and you can go find things like this. And I venture to guess you could go on Instagram and look for the hashtag Art of the City NOLA, and you'll find what people have already done with it, and you can add to your own, and in that way contribute to the art. Anything else you'd want to say about this room before
we
move on?
Well, I'd like to say that we also have a screen where we have three videos, and they are short. There are 2 7-minute videos and 1 3-minute video. One is a short by Dawn Dedeau, which is a piece, an art piece into of itself that is a remnant of her previous installation as part of one of the Prospect Biennials a few years ago that she actually did in the Brulator courtyard. So when you tap this, she has Big Frida in it, and it's very interactive. It was based on Confederacy of Dunces, and it was a really amazing installation. You could actually see what the Brulator looked like before it was painted this amazing shade of ochre. And so then there's the Linda Benglis, which we spoke about. It is the remaking of that piece. And then actually we had a lot of programming that took place during the tricentennial mm-hmm. year. And so one of our pieces that's part of our past public art is by an artist, Zahrawi Abdalian, who is a local artist who's just doing such wonderful work all around the world now. And it was a bell installation in the neighborhood of the Historic New Orleans collection, atop rooftops and balconies, where the bells would ring at the same hour each day, basically from the beginning of January 2018, the tricentennial year, through what approximated the preparations for hurricane season, so that it wouldn't have to be evacuated.
Well, and one of the earlier exhibits that one of the earlier podcast episodes we did with the Historic New Orleans Collection was with Aaron Greenwald, and the New Orleans at 300 and the exhibit highlighting, exploring that. And she was telling me that one of their concerns was that exhibit had to end before hurricane season because so many of the museums and collectors across the world that had donated were very skittish, even though she tried repeatedly to explain that the French Quarter is generally fine during hurricane season, but couldn't convince people. And so that exhibit had to end before the season started.
That's right.
Where shall we go now?
Well, right outside of this, as we actually, when you come through the Brulator, we kind of skipped past mm-hmm. Hellis Hall, which has a piece. Most of the artworks are up on the second and third floor, but we do have this new piece by Elizabeth Catlett, which is a model of the, she was a 90s, three-year-old African-American woman who made this piece again. It was just done in 2010 or so, not long before she died, mm-hmm. but it's the model of the Mahalia Jackson public art piece that's in Congo Square outside Mahalia Jackson Theater for Performing Arts. It's a very special piece, and it should not be missed.
Excellent. So let's go on up to the second floor.
So we go in this elevator, which is gigantic.
So for those of you that listened to the last episode with Mike Scott about the World's Fair, we did that one kind of wandering around the warehouse district. That was a first for us on Beyond Bourbon Street. And so now we decided to do it again. So we started across the street at your studio, Jan, and now we're wandering through the museum because we just thought it was a better way to bring you into the museum a little bit of feel for what you might see when you come to the exhibit.
It's a process. It's very much what this work is about, I'd say. So as we come out of the elevator, one of the pieces that greets you, aside from a short text and the logo for the exhibition, is a piece by Robin Reynolds, who was born in Zimbabwe. He has been based in London for many years, and it is an interactive piece. Robin approached us. He had done a piece for Shakespeare's 400th anniversary mm-hmm. and of London, after the Vischer drawing of London. And so with anticipating the tricentennial, he got all excited, came to New Orleans, and envisioned this idea of using the archive itself. And so in this piece, he stretches out this lovely portrait of New Orleans, the city. It floats above, kind of a panorama view of the city, and underneath there, it's a bit of a treasure map. There are 170 vignettes of histories of the tricentennial 300 years. And so this piece is actually online as well, and there is an iPad that his brother Simon Reynolds prepared. So if you go to, and I know we're going to have this attached,
sure.
the web link that takes you to, this is called Between New Orleans, Between Heaven and Hell. And you have to take a little moment for it to download. And then you can hover, you zoom in, and you can pull up these stories of where you can hear the sounds based from the archives. Mm-hmm. You can see documents that were the basis of these stories.
It's an amazing piece of art, and it really is. So the sort of landscape or panorama of the city is in black and white, and below it everything's in color. There's a hot air balloon with the World's Fair on it. It really is immersive. We could probably do a whole episode just on this piece. It is something really worth seeing in person, but once again, the theme we keep repeating is there's so many ways to experience it. Whether you're here or if you're afar, you listen to this in a couple years from now, you can go online and kind of dig into it. I've had the chance to look at it a little bit, and it's a rabbit hole that like you could never come out of.
Absolutely.
But it's amazing.
And I actually think it's a public artwork because it's via the internet.
Interesting, right? A new take on
it
public
is.
Art,
it
if you
is.
Will, right?
In this old city, a new art. So then we're also passing the Krista Jurisic piece that I was describing earlier, which has become the signature image of the exhibition, and it's on the cover of the catalog, which you have to remember to pick up.
Yes, definitely.
And so we enter, and it's this big, just beautiful exhibition space that we are so proud to have.
And what I love, and it's hard to convey, obviously, in an audio medium, but much like the city itself, when you walk in, you're confronted with lots of different styles, lots of different things. If you are from New Orleans, two things jump out as soon as you walk in. We'll talk about both. One is sort of a gentleman sitting on a front porch stoop, and the other is a likeness of Ernie Cato. And then all around, there's different types of art, and just like the city, you can go from sort of one style or one neighborhood to another and very quickly be confronted with a whole different series of experiences. And it feels that way here in the gallery.
And points of view. I mean, that is what we wanted. We wanted to have a diverse, just kind of electric gathering. I think it's very soulful works mm-hmm. That represents the city. And, you know, that's the word performative for me is important. And so maybe we will go right over to Ernie on this because a lot of people, and y'all are welcome to partake of this story. This is the Ernie Cato.
So let's explain to people who Ernie Cato
absolutely.
Was.
Absolutely. Ernie, when you may want to do it too, but Ernie was a rhythm and blues star who was a self-declared, kind of in the Muhammad Ali tradition.
That's a good...
He declared himself, self-styled, the emperor of the universe. And so he had a wife, Antoinette Cato. His big hit was Mother-in-Law.
Yeah.
And we had fun as I do these tours. Different people remember him playing at their high school dances. Other people pull it up on their phone and play Mother-in-Law while we're doing the tour. So don't hesitate to find Mother-in-Law on your phone. And they opened a Mother-in-Law lounge, which happily still exists today, although it has been taken over, I believe, Kermit Ruffins.
It is, which if anyone was going to take over from Ernie Cato, I can think of no one better than Kermit Ruffins.
Precisely. So it's on Claiborne Avenue, very close to Esplanade.
Yep, that's right.
And so these people, this couple, became really vital parts of this community. This place had an identity. It was used by foundations or neighborhood groups. They really had a role in this, very dynamic role. And so, sadly, at some point, Ernie passed. And so, of course, Antoinette, who had been his champion all along, made these amazing costumes, one of which is on and in the gallery today. But he passed, and so she commissioned an artist by the name of Jason Poirier to make what I call an effigy, mm-hmm. but you could call a mannequin, or this beautiful representation of Ernie. So we feel that Ernie is sitting here on his peacock chair, which is exactly what he sat on in the mother-in-law lounge, and he has his top hat on and this beautiful outfit. And behind him is a portrait, actually, of Ernie. Now, both of these were in the collection, mm-hmm. so we were delighted to pull them out on this occasion. And again, I introduced this as a performative thing. So what Antoinette did, taking it even further, when Antoinette would go out for various occasions, she would take Ernie out. And I personally, at one jazz fest at a photo exhibition, saw the pink Cadillac come driving up, and Antoinette and her entourage, really, but including Ernie effigy, would come out and just cause so much titillation and excitement in the audiences.
Yeah, so it's neat to see, to actually see this in person in the exhibit, and it fits perfectly with, I think, what the exhibit's trying to do. He certainly was larger than life. Antoinette very much was responsible for a lot of that. And the fact that, in essence, he still lives on, I think he would be very excited to be a part of the exhibit.
I think he would, too.
So let's move on a little bit. Why don't you tell me about some of the other things that we see here?
So one other piece that we is a bit of a surprise. Some of these I really wanted classic works by artists. And others, you know, we need a lot of surprises, too. So one... when I went around at the collection, I went into the offices because, of course, they have some of their works, you know, decorating and, you know,
sure.
part of the offices. And so one wonderful image painting, a nice size, was just the light on a shotgun, just a very typical shotgun, a very quiet and really lovely piece. And so I noticed the name of the artist was Jamie Mitchell, and I did not know Jamie Mitchell. And of course I was intrigued. And so I went home and Googled, but we had already selected this piece knowing we wanted this piece in the show. And so when I looked, I came to find out that Jamie Mitchell was Michelopoulos. And so now Michelopoulos is an artist who is based here, has been for quite some time, had donated this work in the, I think, mid-80s, before he had adopted his family name of Michelopoulos. But people may know that this piece is quite different from what he is known for, which are these swaying, very mm-hmm. colorful houses. And so it's really fun to kind of, you know, and of course the label does have both names on it, so
but
people
it's a surprise
can tell.
People,
it is a
right?
bit of a surprise. And he was here on the stoop. So as
so
we
let's
spoke
talk about,
that. Yes, there. So we have a couple of stoop artworks, one by Don Dedeau in the Brulator Courtyard, which is a light work that was just the three stairs, which we saw many of post-Katrina without their houses.
Because the houses had been destroyed, either during the storm or afterwards. And so what you're describing, you would go through neighborhoods and just see the three or four usually concrete steps, which was all that was left of the home in many cases.
And in this case, Dawn Dedeau has adopted this as a light work, and it would be sitting amidst City Park and kind of a beacon, really, and it's called Steps Home. And so we have that out in the courtyard, but inside we also have a piece that's a Willie Birch. And I mean, I really wasn't going for just stoops, but, but these artists, I mean, that's part of what the idea was, to go after artists that truly had been concentrating on various, sometimes very quotidian elements of the city, sometimes really grand notions. But, you know, these were these artists' preoccupations. These were not my preoccupations. And so I wanted to highlight what were the concerns that these various artists, many of which had dedicated, I mean, decades of study to
What I love about the idea of the stoop is it's such an integral part of New Orleans, and particularly African-American New Orleans, where people spend time on the front porch, on the stoop, and you see kids doing homework. You see young people and sometimes old people practicing music. In the Mardi Gras Indian tradition, very, very often the Indian gangs on Mardi Gras morning start at the Big Chief's house on the stoop. And so lots of pictures are there. I think about the Backstreet Cultural Museum in the Treme. It's a wonderful museum about the history of the Mardi Gras Indians, but there's a stoop there, and you can often find the gentleman that runs it sitting out there on the stoop greeting people. And so it's just such a part of New Orleans that it feels like, why would you not tell stories on a stoop
in
an art exhibit?
And we want to foster that as well, you know? So Willie Birch is an artist who, he had just received a Guggenheim Fellowship. He was in New York for years, and he came back to New Orleans. This was his neighborhood. It's Magnolia Street. It has the address. And it is collage elements, paper mache, but it is almost a life-size version, I would say.
Yeah.
And we're doing a series of stoop stories. And we started it last month. Every month we're going to have a series where a few of the artists will be seated either in a stoop or in a chair in the gallery, I think he may be doing. And it's where intentionally not an audience per se. It's really for wandering audience members to be able to engage really one-on-one or just in small groups, more with that sense of a stoop visit and chat.
Again, I love it because part of life in New Orleans is wandering down the street and visiting with your neighbors on their front stoop. And so it very much, if you are from New Orleans, you're shaking your head as you're listening because you know what that's like. And if you're not from New Orleans, but you've wandered at all in the city, chances are you've passed somebody who's called out to you and you've stopped and had a conversation. And it kind of brings that to people. I really love it. Tell me about the floating houses, if you will, that are hanging from the ceiling in the middle of this space.
So these three pieces really hit you right when you walk in. They're, one side is the stoop with the gentleman reading, and the other is these large three suggesting of houses, but they have plexiboxes and they have photographs that have been clearly wet photos that were destroyed in the storm. And it's by an artist, Rontharen Ratliff, and it's called The Things That Float. And Ron was part of a book group, one of our other programs, and he also was on the stoop telling these stories. So I've heard a lot about this, and I had actually. It's a very poignant story of how he had been outside after the storm. He was here for the storm, and then he was in other cities, and you know, all the motions, all the discussion about post-Katrina and stories. And then at one point he went to his grandmother's house in the Ninth Ward, and he saw these photos, and he started picking them up. There was a house that had about 2 feet of water still in it, and as he says, he doesn't swim, and he really all of a sudden got weak-kneed and heart palpitations, and he realized all of a sudden it came home that this was his story. This was happening to him at this time, and it really personalized the whole experience. And so he determined that the way out of this and the way that he would work was through art to deal with this.
It's really a moving exhibit. And if you were here or were affected or had family here, when you walk in and you see it, it instantly sort of pulls you back to Katrina. And at least for me, the houses look like they're floating. You quickly, again, if you were here or you have family here, when you see the pictures, you instantly know what happened. And that is this sort of mold, patina, fading, destruction process that happened to photos. And so people had, you know, when the water came in, it just took everything and lifted it up. And the water stayed for a long time, and it was hot and steamy. And so you would go into your home. In our family home, we had, luckily my parents had taken most of the pictures, but my brother and I collected baseball cards, and we had thousands of baseball cards. And the image we all remember are seeing thousands of these cards stuck to the wall with mold and discolored. And that's kind of what you see here, except that you see people's memories, family pictures. And that is a very shared experience in New Orleans. But I think that this exhibit very quickly takes you back to it. And if you wondered what it was like in Katrina, and you walk in here and you see these pictures and you really get up close and look at them, it really drives it home in a way that I haven't seen in many other exhibits, that you can really get a sense of tens of thousands of people had this very same experience of all of their family memories being destroyed, and not only destroyed, but kind of plastered against the wall. So you saw them destroyed in a way that even now, 13 years later, 14 years later, just looking at it, it's very moving to see it.
There is one piece that's in the other, across the hall, large room, which we'll go into, but Neil Alexander, it's the only image that actually shows the flood itself. And so people, especially those of you who have not, you know, been through it or right. were not here, or I don't know how many people could have escaped the coverage on television of it, but it's a really very brutal image.
Well, and again, I think the exhibit has both joyful things and things that are difficult to see, and everything in between, and different types of media, and it really does capture. So this is our 90th episode, and it's the first one, with maybe the exception of the World's Fair, where we started to talk about contemporary art in the city.
Yay.
Which was not intentional, an intentional oversight, but that can encompass so much, and I think the exhibit does that. As we walk out of this gallery, there's a beautiful picture here by a really great local photographer, Frank Relly, who is really known for taking images of scenes of New Orleans at nighttime. And so it's a pretty neat, you'll have to come see it, but it's a neat exhibit of the architecture at nighttime.
One of his main tools is illumination.
Yeah.
The way he lights these houses is just magical.
Yeah, so it's phenomenal. So again, we've just touched on, gosh, there's probably 24 pieces of art here in this one room. So where are we headed to now?
Well, I'm going to have to just segue right here is a piece of mine, which happens to be right outside of the actual exhibition itself in a stairwell. But just to also give you an idea from the curatorial standpoint, mm-hmm. this is an image of a sign that was Canal Flea Mart, and all of the letters are gone except the word art. And so I like to say that this building declared its to be art, but the idea is I really had seen and photographed a lot of the city, as you may imagine,
sure.
and I was looking for an image for a business card, and I came across this of this sad flea mart named Art, and I said, what could be better for me? And so I used this as a really very hundreds of images that all centered on this single image that I kind of fractured in a number of ways. But so my hope for this exhibition is a bit of that kind of spirit where if you take the time to look deeply at an image or at an exhibition or at an artist's passionate work, there are levels and layers to this that surface over and over again. And so you come away with this much richer interpretation if we take that time to look at some of these points of view.
I feel that way about the city itself, right? The more you dig into it, the more layers there are. So it's interesting. When I came through for a preview last week, I didn't catch that this is yours. But one of the things that hit me immediately is that the typography of the word art, it instantly made me think about the old Jack's beer signs. It's very similar, kind of blocky Art Deco-ish. And so in that sense, it instantly transported me to thinking about that, again, back about 1984. So in the early 80s, and when the World's Fair was here, you could still see the remnants of Jack's Beer downtown. So the warehouses, if you've been to Jackson Square, you've been to Jack's Brewery, but it's now like a series of shops and things. In the early 80s, and when the World's Fair came, it was still an abandoned warehouse. I remember running the Crescent City Classic and going right by it. But again, this is, again, multiple layers, right? So it has special meaning for you as an artist, meaning in the gallery. For me, it conjures up this image of New Orleans past and Jack's. And again, that idea of just taking a moment, like the piece we started talking about, if you take a moment and really just kind of let it soak into you, there's a lot of layers to it. Yeah, it's wonderful. So again, your piece here, when you come in and you look at the urban landscape right at the start of the exhibit, you need to turn around near the stairs and make sure you check it out. So
thank you.
We have time for one or two more?
Do you? Okay. Yes, now there's the second floor, or do we take a quick...
You take us wherever
okay,
you want to
go.
We can
okay.
do both if you want.
So, well, I'm going to say quickly about in this other large space where the Neil Alexander Flood piece is, there is an amazing piece by Gina Phillips that is a fabric piece. So you must go close to it. You walk in and you take a right, and it's right in the center wall, and it is Fats Domino levitating over the Industrial Canal.
So Fats Domino, gosh, passed away within the last 2 years or so. His home was destroyed, heavily damaged in Katrina. And in fact, when Fats passed, like we do in New Orleans, we held a second line and it converged at his home. I remember seeing a picture of Dr. John on his front porch. But yeah, so he is kind of floating over the Industrial Canal. So
and it's Fats got out. That was a big concern at the
yes,
time.
It was
that
a big
really,
concern.
There were many rumors that he had not gotten
People
out.
People didn't hear from him for days.
So it was celebration of that. But then right immediately as you walk in to your right, I don't want to miss talking about Keith Calhoun and Chandra McCormick are two photographers who have very long documented many aspects of the riverfront laborers, the prison system in Louisiana, kids, one of them is at the top, Chandra's is a Kids in Desire project going to school, and another is a church by Keith Calhoun. They're a husband and wife team, and they were cleaning out their house, getting ready to throw away these negatives when their cell phone rang and their son cautioned them and said, do not stop. Don't throw those negatives away. And what they found was how to freeze these negatives. And they arrested the decay of the negatives. And so they have now printed these images where there is this layer within it of the decomposition,
sure.
basically. And these works have now represented New Orleans in the Venice Biennale, one of the most important exhibitions in the world, all over New York Times. They've really become very known.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's a really, again, not only is the exhibit wonderful, but the space is wonderful. And you'll have to see it for yourself. And again, as I mentioned, we're going to do an episode with the Historic New Orleans Collection folks about the building and the permanent exhibit in the front here about the French Quarter as a neighborhood. But it's very stark when you come in, and not stark in the sense of dreary, but stark in the difference. You're going through the history of the original part of the city, and then you come in to this pretty modern space. So not only the exhibit being modern, but the space being really modern. So it's a really neat thing.
Can we stop in the second floor real quick?
We can go anywhere you want. You're the curator. If you're enjoying the discussion with Jan, you're probably thinking about exploring the art we're talking about, right? Well, unlike me and Jan, you're going to need a place to stay, and I have just the spot, the old No. 77 Hotel. It's in a great location in the Warehouse District, just 3 blocks from the French Quarter, and maybe a half-mile walk to the Historic New Orleans Collection and to Jan's studio. It's also close to lots of great places to eat and drink, and it's near the streetcar lines, too. I love that they have a great seasonal art exhibit that's free. It's put together by the people at Where You Art, which I need to get them on an episode one of these days as well. In any event, the Old 77 has a wide range of choices when it comes to rooms. Really something for everyone. They have interior rooms for those who don't want any hint of daylight after a long night out. They also offer premium rooms and artist loft suites curated by New Orleans artists. There's really a ton of choices for a small hotel. And if all that wasn't enough, they have an award-winning restaurant, Compare Le Pen. And here's an insider's tip. Go during happy hour and order a couple small plates. I'm especially fond of their old-fashioned, accompanied by a side of biscuits. The old number 77 is located at 535 Chapultepec Street. Use code BBOLD77 when you book a room and save 25%. Plus, you get a bit of lagniappe, a little something extra, in the form of a $10 credit at Tootlaw for coffee and things in the morning. All right, let's get back to our discussion with Jan.
So generally, there are about 65 artworks. And then if you add, there's also some of these public artworks and the photographers whose works are represented.
Sure.
So it comes up to close to 75 artists whose works are in the show, and some have multiple pieces.
Sure, and some of the artists, many of the artists have galleries or workspace or pieces of art throughout the city. So hopefully it whets people's appetite. Maybe they take a particular interest in an artist or a style, and they can go, again, as it draws you back out into the city, you'll look for those things. Many of these artists have a presence online. So again, we were talking about Frank Relly. He has a fabulous Instagram account. Many of them do. So again, I just love that it's one of the things today that you can not only experience art in person, but you can kind of savor that art and experience it wherever you are. So now we're on the third floor. Is that right? Oh, we're on the second floor. I'm a New Orleanian. I have no sense of direction in any up or down or east or west.
So it's an intimate space. However, these works are just as powerful and pack a lot of punch in them. But you get very close to these works. And I like one of the writers has spoken about how they're in dialogue with each other. For example, George Giroux was a local artist here who was very known for his photography because he had played a role in influencing the famous Robert Mapplethorpe with these nude works that came to fame, but he always considered himself a draftsman first and a painter. And so I selected a piece that was in NOMA, New Orleans mm-hmm. Museum of Art's collection, and it's a view from his studio in the French Quarter. He was part of the urban landscape. You'd see him riding his bike all the time and very wonderfully flamboyant and just always engaged with life. And so again, he's now deceased, and he resides next to George Fabres, an Ecuadorian artist who also played a very important role. He identified a school here called the Visionary Imagists, and he opened a gallery, Galerie Jules Laforgue, and he showed some of the people. One of the artists right next to him is Douglas Bourgeois. So there really is this camaraderie of both mm-hmm. the people and the works being in dialogue.
Well, and I do like, as you mentioned, this space, the ceilings are lower. It draws you closer. The artwork is closer to each other than the big space we were in, the two big spaces. And it does sort of all of a sudden just feel a little more intimate.
Thanks for coming to visit.
Thank you so much, Jan, for this. And again, we'll put links to Jan's work as well as the Historic New Orleans collection, some of the interactive things we talked about over at beyondbourbonst.com/90. But we would certainly encourage you, if you have the opportunity, come to the Historic New Orleans collection. Check it out. Explore not only this exhibit, but the permanent exhibits. Walk across the street, see what's up and down Royal Street here, and just come experience art in New Orleans.
Thank Beyond you. Bourbon Street.
Thank you there. Thank you so much for being with me today.
Thank you, Mark.
That was an interesting discussion with Jan Gilbert. Be sure to check out the exhibit as well as the art all throughout the city. We'll put links to the Historic New Orleans collection, to the Hellas Foundation, and to Jan's work all over in the show notes at beyondbourbonst.com/90.
If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone who loves New Orleans. New episodes are available every other Wednesday. Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.